Hey, welcome. Thank you for joining us today. We are discussing developing an AI roadmap and the strategy that goes with that. Today, our presenters are Mark Jamieson, who is the President and CEO of 2W Tech, and Tom Guerin, who is the CTO here at 2W Technologies. For those of you who are not familiar with us, 2W Tech is a technology solutions and managed service provider. We specialize in solutions for both the manufacturing and the distribution industries. We are the largest Epicor partner in North America, as well as a large Microsoft partner, currently holding four Microsoft solution designations. We've expanded our portfolio to become a one-stop shop for all technology needs. For a full list of all the products and services we offer, visit 2wtech.com.
Hey, thanks, Sue. Well done. So this morning, the social media gods put this at the top of my LinkedIn feed. And Tom, I think this sort of is perfect for our topic and really where the state of AI is in business today.
Yeah, I mean, there's this broad, we're going to talk all for the next half hour about this, but there's this broad world of all AI everywhere all the time. And we're missing the easy putts, the things that are right there, the short things that we can do to really actually have it make a difference in life. And, you know, I know I've got my robot vacuums that run around my house. I've got two Labrador retrievers, and their fur would take over without the robots. So
that's a use case. That's a small use case is what we're going to talk about today. But first, what we need to do is we have to talk about, let's get some definitions out of the way, right? So NLP, what's NLP, Tom?
So NLP is, natural language processing, and, it's about language and speech. So cognitive services, speech, we talk here about sorting messages into categories, or, basically the understanding of, I'm going to say English, but the understanding of language, both directions. So text to speech, speech to text. And as well as the actual understanding of it. So the, what do these words mean? And we're not going to get today into tokens and how those things, the technology of those breakdowns, but, we could have that separate conversation if somebody wants to, but really about how computers can understand language, and then how computers can take what their perspective of something is and turn it back into language.
And then LLMs are the large language models. That's our ability to wrap kind of the whole piece around the specific pieces of knowledge so that it can read the documents. It can, it knows what we're talking about. It's sort of the knowledge.
Yeah. So
aggregation, right?
Yeah. So taking that world of, okay, great. So now I understand what's being said, or at least can, turn it into something as a computer I understand. Now what do I do with it? Well, a large language model is sort of a subset inside of that natural language processing of taking large amounts of data. And by large, we're talking like internet-sized amounts of data often, or big data sets in your company, and training on that data, and so that you're adopting a subset of language that's specific to that data set. In that world of large language models lives the pre-trained transformers, the GPTs. So you've heard about GPT, 4.0 or GPT 3.5 or any of the those pre-trained transformers. Those, again, there's a whole bunch of math that we won't get into today and glaze everyone over, but those are they're like a subset of that. So they're taking large language models and turning them into conversational or understanding or that type of work.
And part of what we're going to talk today is there's no such thing as a small language model, but a language model of more of a definable subset to be able to allow everybody out there to find real use applications right now and today. So, as we alluded to before, it's everywhere, right? I mean, AI is in everything. I bought a I bought a clothes washing machine that had AI in it. I still don't know what the heck that means. You know, so you can't, I mean, it's literally everywhere. And there are huge, huge organizations that are talking about huge, huge enterprise worldwide things. I mean, you've got Microsoft, you've got Meta, Elon Musk, right? Your Tesla runs on AI. Our newest favorite AI application, Grok, is an ex chat bot. China's in there trying to get global dominance around AI. And Apple, they've come up. Amazon just mentioned something. And Epicor is talking about Prism and its AI product and the impact that's going to have. And I think all of this becomes so huge, and it's like, how do I grab it and how do I take advantage of it? And so we look at the general applications, right? So let's just briefly talk about some of these apps that are out there, and we can start. Let's start with the open conversation stuff.
Yeah, so these are your chatbots. My current favorite of the general purpose open ones, would be Grok. It's Grok 3. If you're out there and you haven't used it yet, definitely add it to your list of things to check out. And that'll be on our resources list too. But ChatGPT was the one that really, altered the landscape when the end of 2023, when people really started to use that out everywhere. So, but conversational, it's conversational. It's interact with your data, interact with the bot, interact with the AI, and using natural language.
So then there's the application stuff, Copilot. We've been using Copilot pretty extensively here at 2W. The application stuff, so we've got Copilot. I think Salesforce has their own. I guess we talked about Epicor's Prism. Where do these fit in this? So if I've got this thing where I can go and I can ask a bunch of questions on just general knowledge, where do the application stuff fit?
Yeah, so that's, and some of them tend to be gray areas. So Copilot, Microsoft Copilot as a general term actually includes a number of different Copilots inside of it. But the application specific tend to be, these have more, first of all, you're going to have more capabilities, which in the open conversational bots, they have the ability to add on agent type function, functionality where they can go do something for you. The application specific are more designed around that. So, write an email for me, or rewrite this email for me, for instance, in Outlook, if you've got Copilot turned on. That's something you're seeing a lot of. Also, more specifically trained around a particular subset of knowledge. So GitHub Copilot is a great example. Our dev team all use that all day, every day. I saw something recently. I'm making up the number, but it's like 70% of basically all code being checked into GitHub, which is kind of the standard for repository for code, it has been written by AI. When you're working in Visual Studio, you start typing code and it finishes the next, five lines of code for you, that kind of thing. That's because it's been very specifically trained around that that subset of, code, right, programming. And then things like Prism. Prism, for those not familiar yet, Prism is the AI application being deployed and added in Epicor in their environments, Epicor ERP. And that, again, specific use case inside of their application. So I need to be able to have a business process trigger this particular AI activity, or I need to I want to interact with this subset of my data and using some kind of natural language, maybe a dashboard or just a chatbot type thing. Things like that are very much more narrowly specific to the application, but they're still conversational, or at least have the ability to be conversational.
And then there's business specific stuff. So we should never be putting our business data in any of these open AI chats, because you don't know where it's going to go. But there is an opportunity to create specific applications within your organization that fit to your use case. And one of those would happen to be our Resolve IQ. Just touch on that briefly, Tom.
The first part of what you said there about, you know, what data are you putting in these things, right? So if you've got a ChatGPT that's out there that's a open available model where there's some questions around how the data is being used, utilized, stored, transmitted, all of those types of things, you know, I don't want to be dropping my financials or customer data in one of those, right? Application specific, many of those might be hosted internally in a way that is inside your tenant. So Microsoft Copilot, the AI is in your tenant, and you've got control over where that data lives and data residency. And some of the tools we'll talk about later, like Purview, where you can see how your data is being used and all of that, and how your employees are using it. But then when you get to the business specific piece of that, you know, there are things that you want to have be very narrow. You want them to be specific to what you're doing, specific to your data. You may not want that data to leave your control, your visibility. Resolve IQ is our tool. It's our platform, really, that we've developed. We're, what, close to 3 years into? Resolve IQ is a platform built up of multiple modules, all based on large language. And it lives in your tenant. So in your Microsoft tenant, we base everything in that. And you have control and full visibility to your data. Who has access? How's it being used? How's it being stored? Of course, we did that on purpose for compliance requirements and just general good business hygiene and practice purposes.
So our first webinar was 2 years ago, this coming August, and this was our strategy, and this was our internal strategy that we presented. And you know what, we're actually right on track. And you know, part of this, just the takeaway here is let the billion-dollar companies do the heavy lifting. We're going to let Microsoft, we're going to let Epicor, we're going to let these folks do, we're going to let Elon Musk do the heavy lifting on the applications that we're able to bring to our clients. And we've started that, and we're doing that, and we've made we are productively using AI on a regular basis. I would say every single person who works here is touching Resolve IQ daily. Most of our clients, whether they know it or not, are touching Resolve IQ daily. It's wrapped around our ticketing system. It responds to our clients. Our clients can look stuff up. We're getting ready to actually launch a kind of a deeper version of that to our managed services clients. And then finally, though, we want to create a path for our clients to be able to roll out AI and make it economical and do that to make it economical, make it effective, make it productive, cost effective. So let's do that right now. So number one, first thing you need to do is, what are you going to use it for? What's the use case? There's a huge just morass of this information that's out there, and what are you going to do? And everybody thinks big data lakes. I want to dump all of my data into this thing and be able to magically query it all and have it tell me all about the business. And what we're here today to tell you is, we want you to find the use case, where is the pain point in your business, right? Instead of asking, what does AI do? We want to say, what are you trying to do with your business, and where can AI help? And so we're going to go through some use cases today to maybe spark some ideas. But if you just look at, where are the inefficiencies? Where do you have people touching too many tasks? Where do you have people looking up too much information? I think that's mission one. Tom, you want to weigh into that?
Yeah, that's absolutely mission one. Starting from a what could this thing do can be overwhelming. It is overwhelming. You know, there's so much data in even a small company. You know, Mark and I were looking this morning at one of our data governance platforms that we use here, Microsoft Purview. We have over 4 million documents here at 2W Tech. So 2W has been around since the early 90s, and we've been accumulating documents since then. And we have over 4 million of them that are tagged, categorized, grouped, all of those things, right? If we were to take that pile on as a, you know, I want to run AI against that and use that to train something or whatever, it's overwhelming. It's beyond the scope of the tools. You've got the data that's contradictory, that's outdated, things like that. So where to start becomes a, you know, you just never get it started with anything. But starting with hey, when a service ticket comes in, I want to do this specific thing. I want to handle this particular use case. That gets a lot more interesting and a lot more tangible really fast.
So what we're asking you to do is mission number two is think small. Where can you get the biggest bang for your buck? What is it? Now, AI tends to work really, really well in two or three different areas. One is the summarization of data, right? Be able to aggregate a bunch of different files or something. The other one is to automate tasks. And we'll talk to some of this here in another slide or two. And then of course, kind of the hybrid, the difference is what do you do from, you know, how do you summarize stuff and then automate the tasks and take action on that? And so, as you start to look at it, let's talk about where can you get quick wins and short-term goals. That's what we want you to think about here. Let's not think about, you know, having AI run your entire business and take over the world. Let's look at something like, oh, I don't know, you have a general catch-all mailbox and have AI read it and then route those mails, you know, so you have an info at your company and then have it route to the appropriate people, right? Let's walk through some of this stuff. Let's talk about spreadsheets from hell. Everybody's got spreadsheets from hell.
Yeah, so these are kind of some examples of quick wins that people have come up with and things that we've done, you know, that we do internally all the time and people have done. You know, spreadsheet from hell, right? Like you've got this Excel spreadsheet that accumulates together 20 different things, right? You might be interested in what trends are available here, what data's here, or just even querying it. So if our CFO, David, is a wizard with Excel, and so everything looks like an Excel problem to him, right? So he might have these massive multi-tab, multi-page, giant spreadsheets full of data on tracking something going on in our managed services area. I don't have time to understand everything about that spreadsheet. I just have a question. I'm being able to pop that spreadsheet open and ask Copilot a question about it, or if it's in one of our Resolve IQ libraries, being able to just ask Resolve IQ without even opening the spreadsheet. You know, what was the, what's our margin running on Intune deployments over the last 3 months? Being able to have it go grab that data instantly and respond to me without my needing to understand David's mind and what David was thinking when he built that spreadsheet is awesome. Now obviously that data could be being pulled from other locations, but spreadsheets from hell do exist in almost every business I've seen. So
yeah, and writing the language model around it is easy. It's easy for me to say that it's easy, and it's not super expensive, and it can have a huge dramatic impact on the productivity of the business. I'll tell you another summarizing application is all the PDFs you have. If you have stuff like, product sheets or spec sheets, and you want your customer service or your salespeople to go in and say, hey, I've got a customer who wants this and this and this, what's the appropriate way to do that? Or you might have, manuals that go back 20 years and you need to query those because somebody needs a replacement part for something. Instead of going back and searching through the PDFs or the actual maybe paper manuals, We write a language model around all that stuff, and then you just query it and you say, hey, what's the replacement part for the D11N? And bang, there it is. Talk a little bit about risk assessment. This is kind of an interesting area that we see a lot of time and a lot of motion spent on, because somebody needs to be ITAR compliant or CMMC or whatever that is. Tom, talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, and that can take a lot of different forms. Some of the ways that we're using, for instance, you know, all of our messaging, all of our files, all of that, we've got real-time monitoring for particular data types. So we might have credit card information, for instance, right? Someone might send credit card information. If anyone here at 2W were to intentionally or accidentally try to transmit that credit card information in an insecure way, we would instantly, first of all, it'd be blocked. And secondly, there'd be some alerting so we can go do some training or figure out what was going on. Every once in a while, that's accidentally triggered. Like there's an Epicor data set that's out there that contains fake credit card data, but it's close enough to real that sometimes the AI gets triggered by it when our consultants are putting together a demo. That'd be one example. Or it might be, employee monitoring. It might be, there's private Teams messaging going on, and we want to know if there's, some kind of an abuse of the system going on. Or it might be monitoring for the storage of keys in source code. When our devs are out there, if they're storing the, keys or tokens for accessing a storage account, like a SAS key or something, if they were to drop that, or even worse, a username and password in a connection string or something in code, which not that long ago, a lot of people were doing, that's a violation of one of our risk policies that we've developed internally. And so we flag that. We don't block it if the devs do that, but we flag it, and very quickly a lead or maybe me will be coming over and talking to that dev and asking why they're doing that. Email, all those different things, document types. A really great example, and I'll move on then. We were working with a team last year, and we turned on one of these risk assessment modules that we have on one of their document libraries, and buried somewhere five layers deep in that file structure that was publicly shared throughout the company was a financial doc that had very confidential data in it. The model instantly identified, flagged that document, tagged it as, being an issue, and they were able to resolve it quickly. But that document had been sitting there for years. Security through obscurity, it was probably accidentally put there or put there long before this current set of, who has access to this file share was turned on. Almost every company has got some version of that buried somewhere. So having that kind of real-time monitoring. And the last piece of that that we do is vulnerability assessment. For instance, we do a lot of Azure. We've got 10,000 or more Azure virtual machines that are out there that we monitor and manage on a regular basis. And all of those that are under our Azure agreements, we do continuous vulnerability assessment. And our team is not big enough that somebody is sitting there watching those continuously. We use AI to do that monitoring and flag things so a human can go and take a better look. That's a big one.
So what we're asking everyone to do is let's find the use case, let's find the win, and then let's do that thing. And then let's go out and find the next one and start to stack up these small wins. And so it's not this huge Herculean process or practice that may or may not ever get done, but it's small incremental wins. And there's a lot of advantages to this, but here's some more stuff out there that may spur some ideas and thoughts, right? So let's pick a couple of these. So billing processing. So what we do here is we have client agreements, we have timesheets from consultants, and then they create an invoice. And then we have AI resolve IQ looks at all three of those and make sure that they match up. And if they do, we send the invoice. And if they don't, we present that to a human. We've taken our entire billing process here from about a day and a half to about 20 minutes because we're only addressing the ones that that aren't there. Tom, pick another one.
Oh, what do we have? Resume screening. This is a really interesting one that we've been doing a lot of work both internally and externally on, you know, as we grow. So resumes come in. We also have some pre-employment questionnaire type things that come in that we ask people to fill out when they apply for a job. We then, of course, have got the actual position and the job description and the questionnaires that were filled out by other people who already have are already in that role or work around that role. Using AI to take all and combine all of that together, and although it doesn't make a determination on hiring or not, being able to put it together into a much more standardized package where the group leader or the pod leader in that area can look and say, oh yeah, these are the people that I want to talk to right now. These are people that might be suited to something else, or maybe these are people that, you know, aren't. You know, you've all seen resumes, you've all seen CVs, you've seen questionnaires and things. If they come in 1,000 different formats, weeding through those becomes a whole thing. But taking all those, standardizing the look and feel and the all of that, as well as then maybe suggesting some follow-on questions, the AI is doing that for us as well. We've had some tremendous initial success with that, and we're looking forward to doing more.
There's, you know, one of the ones that we use quite a bit here is the meeting recap and follow-up stuff. So we record and transcribe almost every meeting that we have. And then we take that transcription and we send it to Resolve IQ. Copilot will transcribe it. We'll send it to Resolve IQ. Resolve IQ will create a summary. We'll then prompt the Resolve IQ to send the email, the summary email, to all the attendees in the meeting. And now there's we put humans in there because you want to make sure that, you know, before you send something out publicly like that, you want to make sure that it's correct. But it saves, I can't tell you how much time it saves. I mean, Tom and I were working on one last week, and we probably took what would have been a good half a day's worth of work and, you know, put it into about half an hour. Utilizing Resolve IQ based on the meetings and the meeting notes and our deliverables and what we had to do. That is a huge time savings for us. And I would say almost every client facing employee uses that process at some point or time. Right. You got another one you like out there, Tom?
I mean, all of these are great. Probably let me pick on service ticket routing. It was one of our first applications that really drove it here. We're a managed services provider, a cloud solutions provider, an ISV, we're an Epicor consultancy, we're all these different things. It's all ticket based. You know, we have ticketing that goes on, service ticket numbers flying around. Every one of those tickets at multiple times in its life cycle are touched, interacted with, modified by Resolve IQ. Everything from providing AI created notes internally to technicians and consultants on recommended actions to routing it to the right board or to the right team, setting the correct urgency and impact levels, putting the correct agreement on the ticket. Mark mentioned earlier, making sure that the time entries are set up correctly when people add their time to a ticket. The initial response when a ticket comes in, being able to respond back quickly, letting them know what's going on. If we need any additional information, the AI is already looking at that and going, hey, it looks like this is an error. They're getting an Epicor ERP. I could really use a screenshot of this. Or reading the screenshot that they sent and adding that information to the ticket so that it's visible. All of that stuff, I mean, that's just a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of the stuff that's going on with our service tickets on a continuous basis. We make thousands, 10,000 or more AI calls a day around our service tickets. But that's a really valuable one. And most of our client base has some variation of that, whether it's service tickets or you know, some kind of work handling or whatever, you know, there that might spur some ideas for people.
You know, I think, you know, some of the other ones out here, like process operating, operating procedures, like how do I do that here, right? How do I enter an order in Epicor? What do I do with non-standard inventory? Those types of questions we can create language models around, and we can present them in any language. So if this user is a Spanish speaker, we can present that back to them in Spanish. If they speak some other language, we can present it back to them, even though the document or the language model, the documents that we wrote the language model around are in English. Although before we move on, I want to talk about PowerPoint presentations, because I think it's important to share how we created this presentation today. So what we did was we had this idea, hey, we should do this webinar. Sue and Tom and I jumped on a call. We discussed it, 20 minutes or so. We recorded it, created a transcription. We took the transcription, we created a document from that transcription. We opened up Copilot and we said, hey, create a PowerPoint presentation from this document. And like that, we had a rough draft of the presentation. We then went through that presentation. We filled some stuff out. We did some research utilizing some of the other open AI, Grok, as we talked about before. We used Grok for some of the research, some of the general research we did for this presentation. I used Resolve IQ for some of the internal things that we were doing. And then I used Resolve IQ to help pare it down and create the bullet points out of this kind of this narrative that we had. It saved us days in time, I think. I don't know. Do you have any other secret sauce that you used to create this?
Maybe. I mean, it's so fluid, you know, it's grabbing the right tool for the job, that, you know, I think as we talk a little bit about strategy here, you know, realizing that there's not a single solution for everything. Things like Resolve IQ and Copilot are platforms. Things like Grok or ChatGPT are more, interactive communication tools. There's different places for different things. And things excel better. You know, right now the reasoning models, which Grok is one of, for the world of research, it's amazing, because they're able to kind of iteratively work over your data, that deep search function in Grok, to reason over the problem and then come up with an answer, versus something that might be, one of Resolve IQ's functions that we do, the sentiment analysis, you know, so looking to see, you know, what direction is a ticket trending. That's a very narrow thing versus that very broad. So grabbing the great tool. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think, you know, if you only use Copilot, everything looks like everything looks like a 365 type of thing, right? Whereas it's all varied, and it just depends on what your use case is. So if you stack these things up like this, so the number three in this process is getting your data ready. If you stack up the small wins, this becomes less onerous than if you try to eat the whole elephant at one time. Tom mentioned we have nearly 4 million documents here. And, you know, of all those 4 million, probably 3,800,000 of them are old, obsolete, worthless type of things. And so, but if we were to throw an AI model at all of them, that's a whole lot of time and effort that we wouldn't necessarily need to do, but we do need to categorize them all to find those situations where you may have financial information that's hidden in a folder, in a folder, in a folder, in a folder from 10 years ago. So the key areas is identify the needed data, right? We go through this and talk a little bit about Purview, which is our tool that walks through this.
Yeah, so Microsoft Purview is, you know, Microsoft's compliance tool, among other things, data governance. That's the tool that we use to do automated tagging, you know, finding by type, finding by, you know, content, right? So it's able to look at something and say, hey, this looks like a legal document. Hey, this looks like a health insurance form. Hey, this looks like a, you know, an order form. You know, this looks like it's confidential. This looks like it's general purpose. You know, that type of tagging, that type of identification. There's lots of built-in tagging capabilities, and then lots of custom ones you can do. So using that to clean and pre-process your data, as at least as a first pass. Once you've identified that data, once you've done that initial cleaning, then going in and saying, okay, this is what's missing, right? So if you're actually looking to be doing some training, that might be identifying that, hey, I've got the product specs for these five products and I'm able to ground my model in those, but I'm missing it for these other three products. And being able to use a tool to sort that out. We've got a few different ways we can do that. So that's really that clean and pre-process area. It's getting your data into a, I don't want to say in a standardized form, because part of the beauty here is that we can take non-standard data, but if we're looking to, especially if we're looking to be building a model, making sure that you've got the right data to build from or to ground in, depending on what we're doing.
And then once you get your data done, then we got to look at your infrastructure. And I can take this entire slide and I can probably put it into a couple of words, which is you got to get to the cloud. Yeah. Having your data in the cloud is far less expensive, is far less complicated. It can sit in SharePoint, OneDrive, other storage areas. But you need to be in the cloud. You need to get your ERP system in the cloud. You need to get your if you don't already, you need to get 365 and that part of your business in the cloud. The cloud gives you far more security, far more flexibility, and all of this stuff is cloud ready first and foremost. Now, you can do it on-prem, right, Tom? But it's super expensive and kind of kludgy.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole other webinar probably, but on-prem is available. It's something you could do. There are some very narrow, very specific reasons why maybe you might want to do that, but get to the cloud. That's, you know, getting these things into M365, getting these things, having an Azure presence where we can be doing Azure AI and cognitive services, getting things into SharePoint or other. SharePoint's a great storage mechanism. I'm not talking about SharePoint, the UI, which I understand why people have trouble with sometimes, but SharePoint as a storage mechanism makes it available to Microsoft Copilot, makes it available to Purview, makes it available to tools like, much more available or easily available to tools like ResolveIQ. That, you know, getting into SharePoint, it also addresses, saw there was a QA question earlier about, and we'll get into those, but costs around AI. SharePoint is your shortest putt because you're already paying for it and it's already part of your licensing for storage. That's a half of your battle there.
So if you were to come to us with, you know, a dozen or two dozen sales brochures that you wanted us to aggregate into a language model, the first thing we would do is we'd take all that, those PDF files, and we'd stick them in a cloud environment like SharePoint. And you're right. In most cases, SharePoint's that part, that kind of storage is available with your 365 licenses. So for that piece, there's no real additional cost. So understanding the roadmap, right? Assess what you've got, identify your use cases, small wins, right? Prioritize them all. Shortest putt, lowest hanging fruit. Doesn't have to be huge, crazy project. Figure out the way you wanna scale this stuff, and then keep it going, right? So especially with artificial intelligence, it's not a one and done. It's going to be a continuous improvement. You're going to keep having data. You're going to keep having information. Your spreadsheets are going to change. Your PDFs are going to change. all of that is going to augment for you. I want to make sure we've got time for questions and stuff, but I don't want to forget about this. So we have been really surprised. Most of the conversations that we are having with our clients start at a C-level or board level discussion. We're getting calls like, hey, my CEO wants to do AI. Well, as we've discussed, that's not really a thing. But I think what they're telling us is we need to figure out a way to utilize AI to the benefit of our business. And so that's kind of why we put together this presentation. But there are conversations that we've done many presentations at a board level as far as solutions go. And Tom, I know you've been involved in those conversations. And so what are some of the questions and concerns that we're having with our clients to in order to get buy-in from across the organization?
Yeah, I mean, we're finding, like you said, Mark, we're seeing a lot of this driven from a board level or C level, where it becomes we need to be doing this, but we don't know exactly what we should be doing or could be doing. So those people, you know, it's really working with them to let's find some use cases, let's find some you know spots where this really makes sense. And then they'll start to raise some concerns for people, especially when they're driven from the board level. Are you taking away my job? Are you, you know, you automating away our, you know, what this whole section of what we're doing, or, you know, things like that. That's not the case. You know, and so there's really, you know, providing reassurance, providing training, providing insight and visibility. The other direction that we see is driven from the front line, content creators, programmers, people, you know, purchasing out there, you know, using it to do supply chain, you know, determination or optimization type stuff, you know, more front line or front office type stuff. Everyone using Copilot for their emails, their Excel spreadsheets, their PowerPoint presentations, things like that. Those people have it's a different set of concerns. They're not worried about automating away their job, but the management then has concerns that come up. How do we measure this? What are the KPIs? How do I measure ROI? How much is this costing me? Is this, you know, is this the right direction? And how safe is my data? Are we meeting those concerns around compliance, things like that? So those are the two different directions tend to drive a different set of concerns.
No, that's good. That's good. So to wrap it up, right? Find the use cases, prepare your data, right? Get your buy-in, right? And which will then set you up for the for whatever comes next, because we don't know what comes next. I mean, we're constantly monitoring, we're constantly using it, but what we do know is what comes next is you and our clients. We need to figure out ways to make this economical, to make it affordable, and to make it super, super effective. If you're looking for more resources, I tell you, there's a whole bunch of stuff on our YouTube channel. There's a very nice little quick video about the difference between natural language process and large language models. Our YouTube channel, there's a lot of good information there. Our blog is another good place. We're going to send this out too. We kind of put this together for everybody. We'll send this out after the meeting for everybody who attended, or at least everybody who signed up. It's a whole bunch of resources that we've used in order to put this presentation together, but also things that we monitor on a daily basis to stay in front of this, because this is changing very, very, very fast. But what isn't changing very, very fast is the need for businesses to become efficient, use new technology, and get more done with the people that they have. And I think this is what this is exactly what this is. So, Sue.
Yep, great presentation. All right, so we have a couple questions related to cost. So why don't we just start there? So specific to What's an AI project cost? And then what is the cost for AI to read data? Is it pay as you go?
So let me take a quick whack at this. So it's always our strategy to try to take this stuff and to make it as economical as possible for our clients. We've done that with the security sector, and we've taken that tact here. Because if it's too much, you know, if it's hard to cost justify it, it's hard to cost justify. So, we've got this down to a pretty small, you know, it depends on what you want to do, obviously, and it depends on how big you want it to go. But we create the language model around, and that's kind of just work. Create the language model around the data that you want us to create the language model around. And that depends on if we're talking about one spreadsheet, or are we talking about 400 pages of whatever. And then there's a little bit of consumption that happens in the cloud, that part of it. And then it's usually it's either a per user model or a per transaction model. It just depends on what we're looking at here. Is it automated, or are we facilitating actual users? Tom, what do you got on that?
I think I could summarize that with kind of it depends, right? The volume of data is going to be a factor that goes into it for sure. How expensive is an AI project? The entry point can be pretty low if it's to get started with something. And in fact, if you're one of our managed services clients, I don't know who asked the question. We've got some things that we're now starting to provide as part of our managed services package included. So there's some things there. To address the ingest cost. So there's storage and there's ingest, and then there's processing. So ingest is that process of indexing it, tokenizing it, to stay away from that a little bit, but getting it into a way that it's usable and searchable for retrieval and generation from and things like that. Those costs tend to be the most expensive part of the whole thing. And they are based on the volume of data. So getting your data clean and, is good before you go just dumping all of it in there. But for most people to get started in a moderate, normal way. So I don't know, we've got a product catalog that's a 400 page PDF. That's our product catalog, right? That product catalog, you're talking dollars, not tens or hundreds of dollars to do the ingest. Now, if you have hundreds of those catalogs, that starts to add up pretty quick. So, that's all around if we're doing grounding existing models or in your data. If we're doing custom models, like it's a little bit more expensive. But most of what we've been talking about here, we talk about data models and use that term somewhat interchangeably. But most of what we're talking about is taking a general purpose model and then grounding it with your data. So we're providing your data as answers to what that model has visibility.
Yeah, pre-built, for having us pre-build the Resolve IQ platform saves us a lot of money in the in the development process. So you're looking at, I would say most of our projects are, the upfront cost is measured in the thousands, or maybe, just a little over the tens of thousands, but not much. It's a fairly cheap putt to get into.
Okay, next question. Do you have to have Prism for Resolve IQ to analyze Epicor data?
So it depends on what you're trying to do. Right. So if you're taking your Epicor data and you're exporting it into a spreadsheet, of course not. Right. But if you're, and I think Prism is an evolving technology that I think is going to bring a ton of value to the Epicor clients. And we're actually really excited about it because we resell Epicor and we're hoping to resell Prism. I mean, we want to be an expert in Prism, just like we're an expert in Copilot and in general AI. But if you're able to get that information out of, into a more of a standard format or whatever, certainly we can do that. Just like we can write Power BI to Epicor data. I think at the end of the day, that may not be the most efficient way to do it. But if you had a single use case, it may make sense to do that.
Yeah, I the only thing I'd add there, Mark, is again, it comes down to let's use the best tool for the job. So it's going to depend on the use case. Prism is going to be very good at the general purpose again across your, you know, you've got all of Epicor's team working, you know, generally, but if you have a specific use case, it might be that you, you know, your narrow case, there might be a more effective, more efficient way than doing it via Prism. And Resolve IQ doesn't care. If I can see it through a REST interface, Resolve IQ can see it. So,
what applications should we use?
Depends on, I mean, you know, we shared the story about how we presented, how we made the presentation today, and we touched almost all of them, right? Yeah. In my daily business life, I probably touch two or three on a regular basis. It's either Copilot, you know, Copilot can respond to an email. You know, I type a few words in there and Copilot will fill in all the blanks. My only issue with Copilot is it tends to be very exclamation point heavy. And those who know me know that I am not exclamation point heavy. But I think, you know, that's I'm on my phone and I need to respond to somebody and I type in three words and Copilot creates the little paragraph for me. That's super helpful, right? And so I use that, creating PowerPoint presentations, summarizing meetings, taking the notes and finding the action items. I use that stuff all the time, you know, looking up whatever random trivial thing that I'm thinking about at 2 a.m. I, you know, jump on X and query Grok at what's going on. So it really depends on what you're trying to get done, right, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. And I would say at a minimum, you know, you want to make sure to expose yourself to Copilot. If you're in the Microsoft ecosphere in any way, which I think everyone on this call probably is, expose yourself to Microsoft Copilot. You know, then start checking out the more either application specific or business specific tools. So I would say, you know, make sure that you're exposing yourself to a couple of different ones. Don't get tunnel vision with ChatGPT or with Grok or with Copilot or even Resolve IQ or Prism or something like that. Expose yourself to several and you'll find that you'll reach for different tools at different times.
Well, the key is find the use case. Call us up. Tell us what you want to accomplish, and we can help you navigate that those waters.
Cool.
All right. It's like, excuse me, one last question. What impact can AI have on our workplace culture? How can we prepare?
That's a good question. I think I can only speak to what we've experienced over the last 3 years here, and I think it creates a better environment for everybody because they're doing less of the mundane work. And what we're doing is we're experimenting with how can we get more done and how can we get deeper communication happening? How can we aggregate this data better? We're a more secure organization because of it, which makes a better way to work. There's probably, you know, I think we do need to be sensitive to folks that maybe are a little worried that they're going to get, you know, artificial AI'd out of a job. And quite frankly, I haven't seen it yet. I think, you know, most of our clients can't hire all the people that they want to hire anyway. And I think I think doing all of this and taking all this mundane tasks out of your day to day actually makes for a better for a better job. What do you got, Tom?
I couldn't say better. Letting AI handle the things that people don't want to handle makes life a lot better. There's also, you know, there's a degree of efficiency. I mean, just our customers and our internal customers appreciate being able to get things faster. So, you know, if I'm able to respond to a client request, or if I'm able to respond internally to something that the mark needs in an hour instead of a day, there's an efficiency of the business that happens there. And that has a positive impact on the culture. You know, the that momentum is really exciting. But, you know, I would say the biggest impact for that I've seen, though, so far on culture is just taking all the stuff that nobody really wanted to do and starting to, you know, automate it, starting to provide an alternative.
One last question just came in. I think hopefully it's an easy one for you guys. Is AI helping or hurting cybersecurity work?
I got to tell you, as you know, so as a managed services provider and cloud provider, we love it. Our ability now with Copilot for Security being broad, multi-tenant as well, being able to assess security events or concerns rapidly without human intervention and flag for humans the ones that need to be flagged is huge. I think so from a defense standpoint, AI is providing some really cool opportunities. You know, we automatically now isolate machines, isolate users based on, you know, activity. AI can make all kinds of determinations about, you know, is this really you or not type thing. There's the flip side, though. There's the AI is able to write some really, really, really good phishing emails. So there's driving the ability to for your employees to be make sure that they're well trained, what to look for, things like that. I talked to 2W, talk to your provider about phishing training. That's something you should definitely have as part of your thing. And then also AI is able to and robotic process automation, part of AI, very much able to exploitable things faster. And so that, you know, there's a bit of a, you know, one-upsmanship type game going on between the bad guys and the defenders there. It used to be that if you had an exploit on a system that was publicly accessible, and then there was an internal system that was maybe accessible from that one, and then another internal system, that chain of events for a human to follow that chain of events would have been unlikely. It happened, especially if you were a high value target, it would happen, but unlikely. Now with AI in the mix, you don't have to be a high value target for someone to spend the resources to exploit that chain. And we then and others are using new tools to help look for those exploit chains, which are real and pretty much everybody has some example of.
Okay, that was the last question. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. Like Mark said, there is a pretty extensive resource page within the presentation. So for everybody that attended, you will get a copy of this presentation from me either today or tomorrow, as well as the recording. So you can go back and view it again and again. So cool. My contact information is up on the screen if you need anything, as is the sales and our website. So thank you, everyone, for attending. Thank you, Tom, and thank you, Mark.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.